outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Back to back with Julie in the house.
Yikes. This is getting a little too regular for me. No.
Too regular? It was just a minute ago. Just think of us longer.
Longer, okay.
Yeah. As I said, we couldn't locate Brad to get in here, and I'm going to be gone next week, and there's some email we've got that I thought would be fun to talk to. So why don't we talk through some of that, and then we'll get to the chapter on grace either later in this podcast or next time we do it. We'll see how it works out. But before we get to that, some news on Kenya, I guess.
Yeah, hear it.
Well, we've got that, you know, that well we talked about. You know about the well? We drilled this thing. It's got this holy water. And I don't mean that in a religious sense. It's got this
very
water in it.
Pure water.
Yeah, it's amazing. And everybody's been trying to get them to bottle it. And so they're looking at trying to create a new enterprise. And if you've been following us on the whole Kenya thing, my thing from the beginning has been, I do not want a group of people in the other part of the world dependent on me.
Mm-hmm.
One, because I'm getting older and I don't want to.
Right.
And two, they need to learn to depend on God for his grace and provision and not just someone else from overseas. So all along, we've tried to do things to create enterprises. And so now we're looking at creating this enterprise to give them a way to have income. And I don't have all the details yet as to how much, but they do know most of the people who want to help them set up this business want to charge about $70,000 to
help them just get it started.
Yeah, to get the equipment in play and buy their first set of bottles they can begin to sell and make a profit off of. And so that's the first bit. But they did find a group that does this, kind of helps with water issues, well issues. That's more of a charity kind of a thing. And they're willing to come in and help them set it up for $42,000, which is actually, you know, a doable thing. We're not sure what the return on that is, you know, how distribution works and
right. Whether
that means we got to get trucks and drivers or whether there's someone else. I think there's someone else that will buy the bottled from them. If they bottle the water, there's a distributor who wants that.
Okay.
So they probably don't need to do the trucks and all that good stuff, but $42,000 will launch this. And man, we've been hit. I'll be honest. I at times get Kenya fatigue because it's just.
How many years has this been?
It's been over 10 years now.
Yeah.
And it's been over almost $2.1 million wow. that people have sent. And last time we did this was over the new people that needed money for food.
Food, yep.
Yeah. And I think it was 28,000 and then it was 12 more or something. But people gave. I mean, we mentioned it and people. I'm overwhelmed that people aren't as fatigued with this as I am sometimes. I mean, overall, I look back and go, it's been an incredible celebration of God's provision and doing. And, you know, people have told us you can't work with native Kenyans over there. You need a presence there. Well, if you need a presence there, that's going to be $60,000, $70,000 a year to put a presence there. And also going to learn is more about white management, you know,
right. Somebody
from overseas is bailing us out. And one of the things we saw in that Poverty Inc. video that Brad and I talked about a long, long time ago was that people, we tend to think of people in need as, you know, don't have a lot going for them, so you got to really take care of them. And this whole Poverty Inc. was about was these people are as intelligent and creative as you are.
Mm-hmm.
What they lack are the tools to find a rung up on the ladder so they can begin. And that has guided everything we've done there. We've done a couple of enterprises. We've done a petrol station. We've done a grain enterprise where they buy grain, bag it, and sell it when the grain's not being harvested. Those continue to yield good stuff for both of the ministries they'll support. And so this water thing, we feel like it's one of those. So, you know, if you want to help us, here I am again saying you can help us. We're looking for about another year or so of us being deeply involved in Kenya, and then we'll see what God has after that. So
yeah. If
you want to help us, we could use it again. This should provide some significant income, not only for the school that the property the well is on, and there's a whole bunch of new government guidelines where they're going to have to beef up their facility, and this is going to help provide for that. I will provide for that. But also the excess of that is probably going to help the people in Pokot who are still transitioning to what they're transitioning. So anyway, good stuff. I was supposed to go over there in July. It doesn't look like that's happening because of everything else going on. It's probably a bad time for me to go, but we haven't totally worked that out yet. So we'll see.
Wow.
But what I love when I travel around, even in Europe or States, almost everywhere I go, people are asking me about Kenyans. How are they doing?
Yeah.
What do they need? I love that not just Sarah and I have carried this on our hearts, but just a whole lot of you have. And get email from a good friend yesterday say, we just put a sizable donation into Kenya for you and just wanted you to know what it's for because they didn't stipulate and want to make sure that, you know, we can use it for live stream or something.
But yeah.
I just love that people keep carrying it on their hearts. It's been an amazing story that we that we can give into this. And yeah, as tired as I am of making decisions and trying to, I didn't start out to be a missions organization.
Yeah, right.
God, love will cause you to give away stuff you never knew you could give away. So.
Well, it's such a great opportunity too, to give to something where you know your money is going there. Like it's not going, you guys don't take any off for your own whatever. You just send it all.
Yeah, and God's so, provided enough that we don't have to. And in fact, we always send more Kenya every month than we take in. So when I'm traveling around and people say, you know, can we give you money to help with your travel? And I say, you can. It's mostly going to go to Kenya. So if you wanted to support my travel, I travel at my own expense.
Yeah.
If you guys want to help with that, you're welcome to, but it's likely because of the way our finances work that whatever you give is going to go to Kenya.
Kenya, which is a gift. It's amazing.
It is a gift, yeah. It's been crazy that we've been able to do that. I look back at our life going, wow, when we got kicked out of that fellowship and lost salary and friends and reputation, all that stuff, I'm going, I could not have envisioned. I mean, you think how painful it was then and how at risk you felt of, I don't know how God will get me through this. To look back at all the places it's led and all the people that we've been able to know around the world and be part of and how God has provided for Sarah and me. It's just been been crazy.
Yeah.
It's just no business plan for that.
No.
Yeah, God really, not too good at the business plan thing.
Yeah.
He's got the cattle on a thousand hills, that whole thing. And do whatever I want, pay for it myself. And yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, had a good week with your kids since we talked last?
Yeah, great.
Just 2 minutes ago?
2 minutes ago. No idea what they've done.
Well, you had some email. You've got one there.
I did get one.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
You can write Julie and I. We'll talk to you when we get together.
Yeah. Go ahead. It says, good morning, Julie. I enjoyed the podcast with you and your dad so much talking about parenting. I know you are a busy mom of three and time is precious to you. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Amen.
What you guys are talking about ties in so well with an ongoing conversation I had with a friend who was struggling with a strong-willed child like I was. Being conduits of love and grace to our children instead of owners is such a great language. One question I have is, and I get this more frequently these days, is spanking our kids a good idea in the long run? If you think of it, I hope you get to talk about this at some point on the podcast. Cheers on your journey.
Wow. You left out a sentence in there, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah, let's go back to that sentence. I think you ought to read it just for fun. Oh. Shows what kind of person you are that you would just skip it.
Gosh.
That's cool. I'll read it. She will not read the sentence. But it says, I overheard my sister-in-law's talking the other day about how much they enjoy it when you were on as well.
Yes.
That's what I said. I get that everywhere I go. People are really enjoying you and your voice. And gosh, even we talked about the summer about your voice. And people.
Yes. 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 And he says, your voice is very valuable here in the middle of your parenting. I skipped that too. So.
Oh, I missed that.
Before the.
Yeah.
Sneaky like that.
It is very valuable. Spanking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised we haven't had that question before.
I know.
Yeah, it's kind of quiet out there.
It is. It's that conversation that, you know, I'm a mom and we talk about a lot of things with my friends and spanking is one that it only comes up with my really close friends. Like people don't talk about it. But I know parents that do spank because they'll randomly say, oh, then I spanked my kid the other day. So I know people still do it, but it's not something that I feel like is talked about. A whole lot.
So let's talk about it. I don't know what will happen if we do get arrested. CPS will be in here. Do you remember being spanked as a child?
Yeah.
Well, who did that? Mom?
Yeah. I remember being hit with a wooden spoon.
Oh, my gosh. What kind of parent? And you're going to talk about that? I now understand why people don't talk about it.
My greatest memory, though, I had so funny.
Oh, great.
I remember this shows the strong-willed child that I guess you guys had to deal with, but I remember being chased around my room with mom had a wooden spoon in her hand and I did not want to be whacked with it. And I remember her, she was so mad and I just kept running around my room. But I was older, like I had to be like 10 or 11 or something. And I vividly remember.
I don't think we spanked you that late.
And then she finally said, you just wait till your dad gets home and walked out. And I went, oh my gosh, I'm going to get it.
I should let mom whack me.
Yeah, I should have. Should have taken it from mom. She's going to be way easier than dad.
That's where we got to as kids growing up, man. If mom was going to whack you, that was better than dad.
Yeah.
Dad was on the farm. He's out in the tractor. You wait. I hated that. You wait till your dad gets home.
Yeah.
That makes dad pretty unpopular.
Yeah. It's a fear, man. The next 2 hours is going to be miserable because I know dad's going to be home and then
mom's
my world is over.
Mom's going to rat me out. Dad's going to beat the daylights out of me. Oh my gosh. Yeah, we did some spanking. We were taught to use a spoon, so a wooden spoon, so it wouldn't be personal. That was the teaching back then.
Oh wow. So it's not your hand doing
it. It depersonalized it.
No, it doesn't really.
Some of the absurd things you hear, you take notes on, you go, ooh, that's good, because I want to depersonalize it.
Yeah.
It's actually in application.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a...
It doesn't.
But I noticed one time spanking you that you screamed in a way that scared me.
Mm.
And I thought, what? So you left the room, and I hit myself with the spoon on the rump as hard as I hit you. And I was shocked. I didn't use the spoon ever again because I wanted to feel what I felt.
Yeah.
So I knew how much of that. But just saying all that, I think it's the thing I regret the most, is spanking my kids. I wish I'd never had. And not because you became violent hitters, because neither one of you are. It wasn't all that fear. It was just, you know, it was spare the rod, spoil a child. It was so easy to take a verse like that and give God's justifying to that. And I'm not so much on the it teaches violence. I'm just on, I think there are better ways to discipline kids. Do you spank yours?
No,
never
I
have.
Don't. I have swatted at like their arm or their leg to get their attention. When they were younger, it was definitely a mode of, I need you to snap you out of this for a second because I'm losing you here.
Right.
And I'm the parent that lets my kid throw a tantrum and I walk away. Like my kids learned very early on, tantrums do not work with me, and they still would throw them, but I walk away and let them scream their head off, knock yourself out. So it was more like just to get their attention. But no, I haven't. I think that I don't know why. I was always afraid, I think, of spanking them because I would get mad or frustrated or I'm tired, or I was afraid of hurting them and doing it because I was mad and hitting them harder than maybe I remember wrestling with this, and that was, you know, do I spank? Do I not? I'm like, I don't want to. Like, what if I hurt them? What if I hit them harder or I'm just mad and I'm taking out my anger on them? Like, I don't want that. So I haven't spanked my kids. And I think now I look at it, and if I'm wanting to be respectful of my kids because I want them to be respectful of me, how is me spanking them teaching them respect at all? Like that's kind of where I'm at with it now. I just feel like, there's other ways to have consequences for actions. And so I don't spank.
Wow.
Maybe times I've wanted to. Let's be honest.
It's such a quick way to make sure the consequences fall in the right place. And And I wouldn't say I'm against it. I'd hate to see society say you can't do it. I mean, I'm not on that page. Because I think there may be a situation in which that might be a good answer to if grounding doesn't work, if taking privileges away doesn't work. I know growing up, one of the things that kept order in the school I was in was the fact that you'd get whacked by the
principal.
And I think, gosh, through 6 years of primary, seven counting kindergarten, so 6 years of primary school, 7 years, I can think of one kid that got sent to the principal office. But that was always the fear. And there was a paddle in the principal's office.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that symbol of fear that I'm telling you kept order in the classroom. You didn't have discipline issues. You didn't have kids rebelling against teachers because go to the principal's office. And the whole idea was you're going to get bent over a chair. Like I said, I know it happened one time. I don't know it happened more than that.
Yeah.
But the fear was enough to keep everybody else in line.
So we were at lunch when you were gone with mom, and she told the kids about that, and you should have seen their faces. They couldn't even fathom that there was a paddle And the principal would hit some. I mean, Lindsay's face, I think it took her like a couple of minutes to recover. They would do that. And mom was like, yeah. And we had an enclosed school because she was in Ohio and you could hear it down the hall. And Lindsay was like, so they really hit people. Like, she just couldn't
California kids, man. That's,
yeah. Oh, man.
I've never heard of such a thing.
She could not even fathom that. I thought it was pretty funny.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that conversation.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
I was traveling somewhere.
You were traveling.
Is that recently?
Yeah,
somewhere?
It was when you were in Europe.
Gosh.
Lindsay's face. I mean, all of them were pretty shocked, but, you know, Lindsay's has best reactions.
Yeah, I guess I'm not for fear-based parenting, but mm-hmm. I am for fear-based administration of justice in the wider culture. It's not your parent.
Still a little fear?
I think teachers and schools have so few tools to demand conformity. Mm-hmm. And so you hear these horror stories of kids that just defy the teacher, won't do what they're being told. And then the teacher finally loses it, goes over and shakes them. And then the teacher goes to prison because they lost it. And yeah, teachers can't lose it in the classroom. But when you don't have something that really gets to, and I'm probably speaking out of turn here because I'm not an educator, and maybe they do have great ways to do that now other than spanking. But the horror stories you hear of the lack of discipline in the classroom and the lack of fear kids have to cooperate. And like I said, I don't think fear is a great way to parent and probably not a best way to administrate a school either.
Maybe a little effective, though. I do hear the stories in the schools, and I'm not a teacher either, obviously, but I do hear them from my kids, and I do wish that there was some sort of punishment. I feel like there's not in the schools, and that's a whole separate conversation, but I...
Yeah, because the punishments are like detention.
It's not even detention. It's not even miss your recess. You can't take recess away now because that's where the kids get their energy out. Like, you can't take – then they're going to be even worse in the classroom. So it's all
– Right. You can't suspend them because now they're already probably struggling in class anyway. Now they're going to miss 2 weeks of class. Yeah. And how's that going to help them? And
yeah, it's a
– It really is a problem.
Yeah, it is.
Because
right?
no one trusts
is.
The school to – you know, spank their kids anymore.
Oh,
most
yeah.
parents. I think society's kind of moved away from spanking as a tool.
Yeah.
What I did like about spanking, like what I hated about grounding you was it just seemed like we couldn't get over the punishment till that was done. You know what
yeah.
I mean? The spanking, it was over. I love you. I forgive. Let's go on. And we all, you know, we gave a hug at the end and we loved you. And I'm sure you felt really close to me right after I closed.
Yeah. I'm thinking that's your version of
it. That's parents' illusion. Yeah.
I think a couple of days later, I'm still a little hot about the whole situation.
You know, we needed to, you know, that hurt me worse than it hurt you. You know, all that, all that language from the old days. Yeah. But at least it was over. You could kind of get past the emotion of it when I felt like you were still being punished for something.
Yeah.
I can remember one time Andy did something I asked him not to do, and Andy tells me not to talk about him. So anyway, he doesn't listen to the podcast. I'm sure.
He just won't mention this.
If he does, I'll be in Denver with him. We'll work it out. But he did something that he wasn't supposed to do, and it broke something. And so part of the consequence is you need to buy the replacement for mm-hmm. that. But that was fairly expensive, and it took him, even though I was like, okay, I'll give you a buck off your debt to get me a Diet Coke. I mean, I was doing anything I could to get this done because it just, I know he hated it. Mm-hmm. I hated it.
Yeah.
He didn't have the capacity with $165 to replace this glass table, but I wanted him to own the, so it just, I was giving him money for the stupidest things. Just it was knocking out because I just wanted to get over with.
Yeah.
I wanted to get onto the relationship and I like that about God. I like that in the parenting book, Loving Our Kids on Purpose, the punishments are more about consequences that parents mm-hmm. bear with their children rather than these contrived, I'm going to ground you for 2 weeks, or you can't talk on the phone, or you can't have social media. I mean, whatever it is that we now take away from kids, that lasts a long time.
Yeah.
I hate that.
It's funny. We do that in our house. We'll have consequences for things, and these things live out, you know, sometimes a couple of days. But what amazes me is that once we kind of sit down and talk about it, and a lot of times they're helping us figure out the consequences. We've talked about that before. I do feel like we do let it go. Like they serve their consequence. They carry out their punishment, whatever.
Right, yeah.
And usually it's not with like a grumpy attitude. I mean, usually they're pretty good about it. They know that this is kind of what I've got to do. And, you know, we've had some instances with my youngest and we make little like cards that say, okay, well, these are the things you have to do to get XYZ back. And you give me one every time, you know, so it's a very physical reminder of what still needs to be done.
Right.
We get toys that left out in the front yard. And when mommy and daddy pick them up, he has to earn them back.
Yeah.
And
wow.
And so he, he's does it though. Like he doesn't even complain about it, which, you know, he can be a bit of a fusser sometimes. And he just knows, like, this is, I left it out. I messed up. So this is what I have to do to get it back. And he doesn't complain and he doesn't fuss and he just does it. And I'm always kind of amazed that, you know, when he wants to get that back, he's not fussing and grumping about it. And I don't know if that's because we had a conversation about it. And in that moment, we were able to talk about why we have to do this, what we're learning from this, and we're okay. So then he's okay doing the rest, and it doesn't inflict anything between the two of us in that process.
Wow. What I love about that is that it's something they buy into, this whatever system you've got going. Mm-hmm. So it's not, mom's not doing this to me. Mm-hmm. I did this to me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to find, I love that.
Yeah.
I always hate it when you tell us that somebody lost their something for a few days or whatever. I just go, oh, crud. I feel so bad for my grandkids. But you're doing a great job with the consequence thing. I mean, you got to find a consequence that motivates your child.
Yeah.
And there's got to be better answers than, I'm going to make you hurt so much on your rear end that you will do what I want for the moment. Because then, again, you're getting what you want for the moment, but in the long term, you've just made it in their self-interest to do what you want.
Right.
By the spanking on the thing. And it's...
And I think, like, I mean, I was so afraid of being spanked, and that would, you know, it's just going to warrant a spanking. Like, I remember having those thoughts because I was so afraid of it. I don't want my kids to... Right. Well, I don't want my kids to be afraid of me. I want them to be able to run to me. And I feel like I remember doing things and, you know... And mischievous things or whatever, and hiding it because I'm like, oh, I could get spanking for this. I don't know, but I don't want to risk it. So I'm just not going to say anything. And, you know, I don't want to have that with my kids.
Yeah. Hiding it so you don't get punished is kind of a, wow. You know, if the fear is so great that I got to hide something, then what's better, the punishment or the hide it? Well, I mean, what's worse?
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, but with my kids, I feel like there's not that because I'm not going to hit them. I'm not, I mean, yeah, there may be consequences for some things. And yes, they hide things from me. Of course, they're kids. But right. I'm hoping
you
that.
You just don't know what they're hiding until you drive them to college and they tell you what they've been hiding. I'm like, what? My daughter? What? Yeah, you shocked me.
Well, you know, that may happen too.
Yeah, never take kids. Never take your kid to college, man. They're going to tell you stuff you don't want to hear.
But I want to be, I think we talked about this last, I want to be that safe person for my kids that they're not afraid of me. That's what I don't want at the end. Yeah, maybe there's consequences, but I feel like if I let them have a say in that too, and I mean, they're going to be legit. We're going to do something that fits the crime here, but I am hoping that we can come to an agreement together and that I remain someone that is safe, that they can still feel like they can come to.
Yeah.
That's my goal.
Yeah. And that you're I think this is from Danny Silk's book too, Loving Our Kids on Purpose.
Yep.
I think if you can be in the punishment with your child, mm-hmm. I don't mean paying the price for them. I mm-hmm. mean, just it's a consequence. We both hate it. Let's get through it together. Yep. You know, if you can keep that in it, absolutely. Then you're on the right side of the discipline thing. You know,
right.
And on the other side is the big ogre that.
But he does spank in that book.
So he what?
He does spank.
Yeah. He does talk
about
it.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And the last thing I want to do is judge anybody. Like, I mean, for me, that's why I don't. But I know friends that do. And parenting is hard. It just is. And so I don't want to put judgment on anybody for what they choose. Right. But I do feel like, you know, this is all very specific to how I feel and what works for my family.
Right. And I don't think I would consider spanking the way we're talking about it. Like you've got a 6-month-old playing with electric socket and you kind of swat them on the back to get their attention. It's kind of a shock.
Right.
I'm not talking about that.
That's not,
because I think that's fair game. And that just, whoa, this is not safe for me. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
But the full on, I guess my question is, how did you come out of that loving us still?
Good question.
I want an answer. That's amazing how much you hit stuff and feared the spanking and it just kind of.
Well, thank goodness you guys eventually stopped that.
Yeah, thank goodness.
My
worst day with you?
Uh-oh.
You know what it is?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
Maybe I don't want to know.
And I mean, worst day with you just because of how it made me feel. And I wished I'd never done it. And it was, we were at our uncle and aunt's, your uncle and aunt's. And they made breakfast for you. God probably made this big breakfast. You remember that?
Oh, I know it. Yes.
And at the end of it, I said, hey, let's thank Uncle Ron for making breakfast. And you were like, It just, nobody saw that except you, but you just turned your head up and away like, no, I'm not going to thank him. I said,
I was young though, right?
Oh my gosh,
I was very little. I don't remember this, but I've heard this story.
Yeah, I think you were like 5.
Okay. I wasn't doing this as a 12-year-old.
No, or an 18-year-old. Yeah. No, you're a little kid. And it was like kind of, for whatever reason, you just decided you didn't want to think. And for a parent in my day, that was like, I'm being defied. This is rebellion. So it was like, you need to thank Uncle Ron or there'll be consequences. And I think I even said, I'm going to spank you. And you were like, not going to do it. You just defiant. And so now it wasn't that you didn't think, that's not a punishable offense. You didn't thank Uncle Ron. Well, it was a punishable offense.
You're not listening to me.
So yeah, this rebellion. So I take you in the other room. We have this long talk about it and da da da. And then you told me, yeah, I'll tell him thank you. So we go back out and then we get there. You wouldn't do it. And I still, this is how strong-willed you were. I was like, what? And Ron's like, it's not important. Yeah, I don't care. Like, look, dude. It's not
even about that anymore.
So back in the other room, gave you a spanking, came back out. You didn't do it again. I took you back, gave you another spanking. Finally, you gave a thank you you didn't mean. And I
was to avoid the next spanking.
And you had all the rebellion still in your heart because you were still really angry at me, but I had won. And gosh. That was just so, I look back at that going, probably my stupidest day parenting. I mean, there are probably others that compete with that you could probably talk about. But in terms of my memory, because Ron's begging me, Sarah's looking like, what are we doing?
Why are we fighting this?
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm in it now. I got open defiance on my hands and I can't let go. You know, I think today I would have just said, you know what, Julie, if you're not grateful for breakfast, why don't you just go in the other room?
Yeah.
We'll see you later. When you're ready to be thankful, let us know.
Yep.
I would have gone on with our day.
Yep.
But yeah, that whole thing, taking it on. This is funny because Amy wasn't a year and a half old, I don't think. She was just hardly walking. And there was a battle over whether she's going to pick flowers without asking grandma from a pot right outside. In fact, it's the house you live in.
Yeah.
It's like that little patio thing. And I remember you going out and dealing with the thing. You came back in, you looked at Sarah and you said, I'm going to win. I've decided I'm going to win every battle I have with that child. Sarah, I just busted out laughing. We held it for, I think, 6-7 seconds. And then we just busted out laughing. What? It's not worth it. It's not worth winning every battle. It's not worth making everything about authority and submission and making kids feel like they're these little automatons that got to do whatever mom and dad want. And I don't even think we gave you guys the freedom to be angry. Even if we asked you to do something that made you angry, we wanted you to do it with a good attitude. Which now I know means we got you to pretend you had a good attitude. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like
great pretenders you raised.
Yeah, we did. Oh my gosh. I mean, somehow God rescued all that. I think some of that stuff we got about 12-year-olds letting kids be more decision makers, being with your kids in their failures rather than trying to make them perfect kids. I think all that was helpful.
Yeah.
But you had the added burden of being a pastor's daughter in your mind.
Yeah. Which is a whole other beast all by itself.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that beast. Oh, we haven't got a question. Well, maybe wait till we get a question on it. Since no one's asked, why should we?
There we go.
Yeah. Why should
we'll wait?
Do you want to get into
it? Who cares about that?
Well, let's get into this letter first because we're going to run out of time. My gosh, we're into this already. This came from someone, didn't have their name here. Sorry about that. Said, really enjoying the podcast. I'd be interested in hearing how you both experienced your father-daughter relationship. Wayne, what are your insights into parenting a girl or young woman? Julie, how did your father love you well? And how did he fail? And again, permission to speak freely.
I'm on the hot seat this
podcast. But no, I think our relationship's in a place that I don't feel like I have to pretend we got it all right when you were younger. I just don't. And I don't feel like you love me less if we talk. Maybe some repressed memory will come out and we'll have to go to therapy together, but I'm happy to do that. Where did he fail? As a younger girl, woman, what were you wanting from your father? And then to give a little clarity, that says, as you might guess, I'm a father of a 14-year-old daughter, my only child, and our relationship is very difficult right now. Each part of it is that her mom and I have been separated for several years, but early on in the separation, I spent significant time with my daughter. In the past 1 to 2 years, though, she has really withdrawn from me to the point where I feel like I've lost most of the connection we shared in previous years. Mm. I know that some of that's natural as she moves into her teenage years, but I have a lot of anxiety and fear as I feel that I am in danger of losing the relationship entirely. It feels like my attempts to pursue a relationship with her are failing. I'd really appreciate you just hearing about things that have bonded the two of you together. His father-daughter over the years.
Well,
yeah, baby.
My heart breaks for him, though. I get that teenage years and you second-guess everything. when there's a teenager.
Oh, we had that with you too. I mean, we had a period of time where Sarah and I thought we were losing you.
Yeah.
And just in terms of,
I think everybody does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's part of, if we see it as a gift, it's part of God helping our kids become decision makers, because mm-hmm. that's how he made them to be. And they kind of resent mom and dad
right.
controlling their lives.
You have to give them that space to yeah,
you do.
Have more control over their life. Because that's what they want. They're trying to find who they are.
Yep.
And apart from you, they're wanting to distance themselves from you. So for me with Amy, I mean, this is different than with you, but I have made it, I mean, and with all my kids, I really strive to what is important to them. And I want to be a part of that. Whether it's listening to Austin talk about Fortnite, yes, that stupid game lives in our house. Or Lindsay dance, like she's, you know, her life is dance, and she and I have really bonded over just me sharing that with her. That she even sat with me at Cheesecake Factory and went to lunch with mom. She did.
What?
Yes,
what?
I couldn't believe it.
Again, I'm missing all the important family moments.
She's attached to mom, has been since she was
my
a
gosh,
baby.
She is grandma's girl, and she will. She sat with me right after surgery. It's about the only time she's ever chosen to sit with me in a restaurant.
But. She is grandma's girl. But there's a closeness to her that I know is from me sharing this passion with her.
Wow.
With Amy, it's sharing her theater passion. Thank goodness I like the theater, but I mean, it's finding what does she love? And that's what I'm going to crawl in with her, because that's where I'm going to know who she is. You get Amy talking about theater. We were talking about this in the last podcast, and her whole face lights up. She's just a different person. Like that's because that's what her passion is. So, I mean, that's like the biggest thing I can tell anybody that I've learned from raising, you know, one teenager, she's still in the middle of it, but is what are they passionate about? And how can I share that with them? Because that's where you show them that you're important and what you're involved in and what you like and care about is important to me. And I think that mom was so good about that. I remember her listening to me blab about anything for hours, and she just would listen and just take an interest. And I think that's really all that you want. You want someone that just feels like you can talk to or that will listen to you and not cast judgments, not try to change anything, not try to, you know, nitpick what you're doing, but just to share life with and just to share what you're into that day or whatever it is. And I think one of the things that I do remember, I don't know if you remember these, but we used to do like father-daughter lunches.
Yeah.
And I always loved that because it was, again, it's that personal time. It was something special. It was father-daughter at time. And I would sometimes be nervous, you know, like, what are we going to talk about? Mom and Andy aren't there. I don't know. Like, you're just, I'm weird. And I remember one time going with Tara and her dad. Like, I remember those lunches and I remember those moments that they were special. But I think that was, again, of I think I picked the place we went, and it was kind of you crawling into my world, and that's where I felt loved.
Yeah, it was a father-daughter date. Part of it was to teach you, to show you how I wanted a man to treat you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
Which I didn't know at the time.
I'll have to get you. Yeah, I wasn't telling you that. I was just going to say, I want you to know what it is to be well-treated.
Mm-hmm.
We heard when you were, even before we became parents, part of the group we were part of teaching-wise, they were talking about, and I don't know how true this is, I think it's likely true, that a woman takes her identity from the love of her father. So, you know, if the father loves and respects and treats you well, she'll take her identity from that more than from the mom. And I don't know how it's true, and I think that makes a big statement about where fathers are absent, then there needs to be another male. It could be an uncle, could be whatever.
Yep.
It also makes a big statement as to when that's betrayed by abuse or abandonment or neglect, the damage that does to a woman. I've joked, but it's true. You wrapped me around your little finger when you were born. I mean, I've loved having you as my daughter, and I've enjoyed it. I've not always done well at it, but I've always wanted to be connected to you. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted you to love and appreciate me, and I've wanted to share that same love and appreciation for you. So I think that's important, finding your way to someone's heart.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that means you just got to keep changing. I think that what's hard about parenting and some of the parenting books we got when we were younger were all conformity based. Here's what you got your kid, blah, blah. And it was all, and so you're treating your kid when they're 12 like you did when they were two.
Right.
And you're making them do what you think is best, and you're always counseling them to get it right, even though your life is not right, even though you're not perfect. You want your kids to be, or at least appear to be. And So I think the whole idea of I'm still schooling you as a parent when you're up above 12, 13, 14, I think that's where you're more letting the kids chart their course and you being alongside and not always giving advice unless it's entertained, invited, asked for. I think that's real important. And if I had a 14-year-old, we just went through this with your older one. Mm-hmm. And Sarah and I took a trip with her just because we always planned on doing that with the kids. But this was really different because I felt like we were losing her. She, you know, we weren't cool grandma and grandpa anymore. We were kind of like grandma and grandpa. And somehow on that trip, and we prayed a lot, and just the things we talked about with Amy, the things we had on that experience, somehow those days together bonded us again with that girl. Mm-hmm. And she's different when she comes here, different when we see her. She's different in so many ways with us. And Sarah and I just went, oh my gosh.
And you didn't just take her on a trip. You guys crawled into her world. I mean, you took her to theater plays. Like you, that's that finding what she's passionate about and you shared that with her. And I think when you take time to do that, it just speaks volumes to them that you cared that much to that you're going to just invest in what they're interested in.
Yeah. And we let her totally choose everything about the trip, where we ate, what we did during the day. Yeah. And it was funny because like, when do you want to, we're going to do something next day. When do you want to leave? And your daughter goes, 10. And I'm like,
what?
10?
The day, what am I going to do for 4 hours before
the day is half done. We went vacation as kids. My gosh, we were up and out by 8 almost all. I'm a get up and go, embrace the day kind of guy. And I went, really? 10? Okay. So we did 10. It was a tough morning. So I think Sarah and I got up and went out for breakfast together. Came back, got her. Yeah. Yeah. But it's just finding, if I was, whoever, I get the name of the guy who wrote this, I think it might have been Ken, but if I've got a 14-year-old or so that I'm feeling lost with and separation has been part of that, I'm finding a way to just be with her. And if it's distant, just saying, hey, listen, I miss you. I want to get back in your life. There's a way I can do. Let them be part of that. I don't think you have to second guess everything they're doing. I would just have that. I would talk about gentle honesty. There's no situation in which gentle honesty doesn't have the chance to open doors. Mm-hmm. If you just say, hey, listen, I feel like I'm getting closed out of your life and I don't know if I've done anything to fail you or whatever. And if so, come back to me and I'd like to know. But I want to find a way back in for us to be friends. And
yeah. And even if that's just you saying too, like, hey, I love you and I'm here. Like I read recently that regardless of whether you think they want to hear it or not, they really do want to hear that you just love them.
Yes.
You're just there. And yeah, it's get into what you can do with them. And the time is so important, but the continual reminders, I just love you. I just care about you. I just want to be a part of your life because I love you. And there's no expectations. I just love you.
And isn't that when even as if we get kind of hurt by someone and so we kind of get sultry and put off in it, it really isn't to break the relationship. We want them to come running to get us. We really do. And sometimes the other one's so stubborn. I'm not coming down. And that's what couples do to each other, unfortunately. So when you're getting that feedback from somebody, assume they want you, but then come gently. Don't come in with, okay, I want you to know what's going on here because we're going to be good friends, because then that's not going to happen.
Yeah, they're going to keep running.
the glory, I think, of this whole kingdom that Jesus started is it can never be compelled. It can only be invited. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true of relationships. You can't compel someone to a relationship, but you can invite them.
Right.
And you can keep saying, I remember I heard on James Dobson back in the day, where some father had sat down with his kids and just said, you know, if there's any way I failed you, they were like 17, 18, any way I failed you that I have not apologized to you, could we talk about it? And I heard, and he said, like a 6-hour lunch, he'd been this horrible alcoholic father and all that stuff. And I thought, man, I'm going to do this with my kids because they're not going to have anything, man. I've been a pretty good dad all along. And I did it with both you and Andy. I don't know if you remember the conversation. It was one of our father-daughter things, but I asked you that. And both you and Andy, I mean, you talked about my anger and how much my anger had scared you. And oh my gosh, I was shocked. I was like, oh my goodness. I was a Pharisee. And so God wasn't rewarding me the way I thought. And I was angry at God, but I took it out on the family at times. There were things that just made me explosively angry. And it was scary to you guys. And I remember having that conversation and being able to own it and saying, yeah. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
At all?
Mm-hmm, I do.
Was it helpful on your side? It was helpful on my side. It was It was embarrassing, and I wanted to be defensive, and yeah. I kept trying to back away from that. It was awkward.
Well, and I think, like, hearing you apologize about it, because, I mean, I don't remember you apologizing very often.
God,
like,
whoa. That's not what I share on my tapes everywhere.
I mean, just – and it was something that I didn't really do with my kids. I'm like, I'm not – and it's hard to apologize because then I did something wrong and I'm sorry. Like, that's kind of a hard thing to admit, especially when you're the parent and you're supposed to know everything and get it all right. And but I remember the effect that that had on me when you did apologize, and that's one thing that I've strived to do with my kids is to apologize to them when I yell, when I mess up, when I, you know – look back and go, yeah, that was dumb. I'm sorry that I didn't handle that right. And I think that it's funny because I've done that more over the past few years, especially as they've gotten older. And it's amazing how now my kids apologize. They're so quick to apologize because they see me doing it, I think. Like, I want to say that's why. I mean, my two youngest, because I think I started this when they were younger, so they've just seen me do it longer. As soon as they realize they've done something wrong, I'm so sorry, mommy. I'm so sorry. And I feel like they're genuinely sorry.
Yeah. Not just trying to avoid
they're
that
spanking.
They're
not. Yeah.
That wooden spoon you've got in your hand.
Yeah, right. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I think I maybe would have pleaded, I'm so sorry, Dad, just so you wouldn't hit me. But like, I feel like when it comes from them,
Wow, I'm not looking good here.
But I do feel like it comes from real genuineness that they're really sorry that they messed up. And I love that. And if me apologizing to them, because, yeah, I don't get this right, I'm far from it. But if that is going to help do something in their hearts that they recognize it's okay to apologize and make things right, like, that's what I want them to learn.
I'm sorry is probably the most powerful words we have as humans in almost any relationship. We can the idea that we have to pretend, because we get involved in the situation where there's hurt or whatever. And we spiral up in defending what we did and why we did it. And so we never even have something to own. Particularly if the other person is more at fault, for us to go and own our part of it and say, I'm sorry. I tell you, there's no more powerful thing in Sarah and my relationship. Mm-hmm. I think my relationship with you guys, there are things I've apologized to both of you guys about. And just breaking that illusion that we've all got it together. And so that only bad people need to be sorry. It's just, no, we've all screwed up. We've all made mistakes. And if you can own them, it's amazing how fast healing comes with
sorry. Oh,
yeah. A genuine I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Not the old fake apology. Yeah, I'm sorry if I did anything that might have hurt you.
Yeah.
That's not an apology.
No. When it's genuine.
I'm sorry own something. It says, you know what? I responded to you in a bad way.
Yeah.
And I apologize.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that helps.
Yeah, it does.
So hang in there, man. I know it's tough when a relationship's broken. I think you, instead of getting into the fear and anxiety of I'm losing the relationship, because if you go there, every decision you make out of fear and anxiety is not going to be helpful.
Yeah.
If you can maybe make the assumption my daughter does want to connect with me, the love of her father is important to her, but there's something crawling in between us. May just be teenage angst. It may be I've done something to hurt her. It may be punishing you for being separated from mom. Whatever it is.
Right.
Find a way back.
Yeah.
And ask God to show you a way back. I've done that always with things like that. Even people today that I feel estranged from, I'm always saying, God, what can I do to get back? Is there any way? And then you try, maybe, and I've done it. I've tried to apologize. And people throw the apology right back in your face. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. But okay, there's a difference between trying to find a relationship back with somebody who wants it and somebody who's abusive in it. And then your I'm sorry gets used against you. But it's still worth offering.
Yeah.
Because relationship is the most valuable treasure we have.
Yeah.
A relationship with our children is the most. So we didn't probably get to all my failures, but we're way over time. So that's enough for now. Thank you again.
Anytime.
Okay, let's do number three.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.